All right, we are so excited to be here today in our day of interviews. The morning's gone very well. I'd like to welcome everyone here. Today is January 15th. For some reason, I was thinking it was the 14th. January 15th, we are now in open session. We're at the district office. It's 11:20. Those present are board members Connie Morgan and Gary James Blair, Christy Cooley. Our superintendent, Marshall Garrett, as well as district administration, our staff, as well as community members. So welcome. We are now in the interview, continuing on with our interviewing process of our candidate for our business administrator. We are going to have a process where the Board of Education will be asking questions of our candidate, followed by a presentation by our candidate to the Board of Education. So thank you, and we welcome you, and hopefully you'll feel comfortable in talking about the questions that we have prepared for you today. What we'll do is have a rotation. We're going to start with Connie Morgan. She'll ask you a question, and then we'll just kind of rotate down through the rest of us. This portion of it will go 30 minutes, so we will end at 10 to 11. Connie.
10 to 12?
I'm sorry. Yes, that's exactly the time we're going to end, 10 to 12.
So welcome, Patty. Thank you for coming. My question is two parts. Number one, what are two strengths that you would bring to this position? And after that, what are two limitations that you bring?
Primarily, I bring a wealth of...
Can you use the mic?
Sorry, I've got a wussy voice.
I'll say it so we can hear it.
That's my weakness. I think my primary strength is in the experience that I've had. I've worked at the State Office of Education for over 13 years, and as part of that time, handled the entire minimum school program. So I calculated and distributed all of those at the time were $2.5 billion. So I know the minimum school program very well. I've got that experience, and then I have hands-on business administrator experience at the Park City School District. I was there for just over 6 years. Limitations. I think that I tend to say less than perhaps someone wished that they could hear, but I'm always happy to add more. But my education is in business and economics. So I try to be concise and minimize, you know, and be efficient. I think that's it.
Thank you. Tell us about a time when you experienced a work-related conflict and what you did to resolve it.
I think with the many conflicts that arise in the workplace, most of them can be resolved by providing information to either parties and making sure that there's understanding on each side to get those resolved. Sometimes it's a simple task. Sometimes it's more arduous. For example, we had a number of payroll issues when I first arrived at Park City, so to work through all of those took some time. It took some months to get those resolved, but we did it. There are other, I don't know if I'd describe them as conflicts, but disagreements between people and perhaps direction and whatnot. I'm a believer in information and education.
All right, thank you.
Hi.
Okay.
We're highly dependent on information because we don't know a lot. So what kind of weekly, monthly, and annual information will you provide the superintendent, board, district directors, schools, and the public?
Well, according to my former associates, perhaps that was one of my weaknesses, was that I provided information too much too often, you know, as the budget changed mid-year, I'd provide those numbers, and as assessed valuations came in and those numbers were different from what we had anticipated, I'd provide that information. And the superintendent, Ray Timothy, chatted with me once, and he said, "Why can't we just have one budget for the whole year?" We can, but things do change. So I'm happy to provide information as you need it, and of course, I love it. I'm happy to provide information as often as you'd like.
My question has to do with the legislature, and we here have a very good relationship with our legislators from the area. And my question deals with a recent or something that came from the last legislative session that had a potential financial impact to public school districts. Can you tell us something that you observed from the last session that would affect public schools and financial impact to us?
Well, as part of my work at the State Office of Education, what I do is to write fiscal notes on various bills. So the supervisor provides us with a copy of the bill, and we provide information about the fiscal impact on the state and on LEAs. So, for example, I would point your way towards one of Senator Osmond's bills this year, which would eliminate the state's ability to set a year. So a school year would vary depending on the LEA. If you're a charter school, you could set the school year as a day, or you could set it at 200 days. And so obviously we have some major concerns with that one. There are so many bills that come our way. I noticed, now kind of fold in some comments about the data information that were provided. What typically happens when there's an economic downturn is that certain line items, those programs, are eliminated. The legislature says, well, you know, we cut money here, cut money there, and then another thing that they will do is to eliminate programs and combine them into one line item, like the accelerated students or at-risk students, for example, during the last few years. But then they reduce the funds, and the incentive, they say, is, well, you have, you know, more leeway to do with those funds than you had before, to try and make it more appealing. So that's typical in the information that we've seen. You see an elimination of some of those programs. Fortunately, I think we're headed the other direction now, and this year I would anticipate seeing additional programs. My concern, of course, would be those programs that fundamentally change how districts are funded. For example, this bill of Senator Osmond's, other backpack-type funding issues, and those cause great concern, I think. Your ability to tax, and, you know, on your board local, for example, you're close to the ceiling there, and voted local, you've got a bit of headway, but you do have a funding cap that's been legislatively imposed. It's only so much you can do, which, you know, thank goodness for the Education Foundation. They're able to do what they do, to at least provide that additional piece.
Perfect. Thank you.
Why is this scenario a problem? I have asked you, as superintendent, for a detailed report that needs to be done by the end of the week. You know that it will take at least 25 hours to complete, and none of your other responsibilities go away. State how you would manage your time and the time of your department to get the request finished.
I would request information from various staffers who might have a hand in whatever it is. For example, if it's payroll information or HR information, something like that, if it's primarily budget. I'm probably the only one who's going to be working on that, and I would work until it's done. And I think a business administrator's position is one that has just countless hours, and that's just an expectation. That there are times like that when a task just has to be accomplished. The other thing I would do is hopefully have a cache of data that I can draw from to put reports such as that together so that it's not quite so arduous. I have had those happen, however. You know, for example, during budget discussions to run various scenarios. So what if we imposed this tax? What if we did away with that program? That sort of thing. So to present those numbers. And the way I've approached that is to have a data set available and be able to make minor changes to that, you know, run through the entire Excel sheets, set of sheets to produce the budgets that you need, give you the information that you need. And then hopefully, you know, perhaps in that first go around, there are some timing challenges, but I would hope that after that I have a sense for what it is you need when you need it, so we're prepared to answer those questions.
Thank you very much.
The superintendent, the superintendent has asked you to find funding for an additional 5 FTEs. What process would you use to review and respond to the superintendent? That's part A.
For 5 additional FTEs.
Right.
Is this current year or the coming year?
Any year.
I'll do both. If it's current year, we might be in a pickle because, you know, budget decisions have already been made about total expenditures and so forth. And unless there's been a collection of tax dollars, for example, or additional funds that we hadn't anticipated, there might not be space to build in an additional 5 FTEs. If it's for next year, that would be one of the scenarios to show next year's budget with the cost of those additional FTEs. Insurance, obviously, all the benefits associated and so forth, by fund and function and at school level if you need it. And then show the effect on the budget. What's the bottom line? Does that put us in the red, or are we okay given the anticipation for next year's enrollment and the associated dollars for state funds and so forth?
Okay, so say you go through that process, and then after your review, you feel that there is not enough money for the request. How will you respond to the superintendent?
Just to provide the information, say, you know, here's the additional cost of those 5 FTEs, what, around $425,000, something like that, and we're in the red in Fund 10 by exactly this amount, ceteris paribus, all else remaining the same. You know, if we hold everything else constant, this is the effect that it has on the budget. So to provide the information and then to ask questions, well, if we were to do that, is there someplace else that we can reduce? Is there an anticipation of a certain program going away or cost that we have the current year that we won't have next year? That sort of thing, to make sure that we're looking at all possible avenues.
Thank you.
As the supervisor of the business department, what is your vision of customer service?
I think the priority needs to be on providing anybody who asks for it the information that they need to help them. You know, for staffers to do their jobs, for people within the district office, for people at schools, for, you know, all the staff, everybody, to provide the information that they need, but to always do it with utmost professionalism. And I dealt with one of those situations where we had an employee who would just get mad and start yelling at people. As it turns out, she moved shortly thereafter, so we were able to replace her with someone who was just the opposite and very kind. And he always apologized for, you know, someone who felt they'd been put out and that sort of thing. But yes, I think there's an expectation at the district office to provide some leadership and to be a good example.
Okay, I have a hypothetical situation for you then. A series of consistent complaints about how customers are treated by the business office employees has occurred. Tell us how you would handle this situation so it's a consistent complaint.
First thing, of course, is to gather information on what has happened here and to gather that information from both sides. Sometimes there are people who just like to complain. Other times there's an honest-to-goodness need that needs to be addressed, a change that needs to occur. And we can certainly address that, and perhaps some training is involved, perhaps. I don't know. I haven't heard anything at all negative about business staff, but if there is a serious problem that needs to be addressed, and it might need to go through HR steps of, you know, providing a written letter and a file and so forth.
Thank you.
Okay, mine is, tell us what you know about the changes that occurred to the procurement code in the last legislative session.
Wow. I honestly can't answer that one. I can't tell you what occurred because I'm not in a purchasing position in
okay.
my present position.
There's a follow-up. What are your ideas on how to train principals and staff on a new law? And what are the key areas that need to be monitored, and how do you think this monitoring should occur?
Key areas for monitoring. The person who is in this position following Zane steps into a good situation. Zane is highly regarded for his skills, and so I know that things are well done, that procedures are in place to protect the district and to protect employees, that information is well handled. The new financial system, I'm sure, has constraints in place and authorizations, if you will, approvals that need to be in place before certain purchases can be made or dollars can be spent. So I'm banking on that, if you will. And
sorry, are we ready?
Well, I'm pondering additional information to that. I am making the assumption that processes are already in place that that will address that, and if there are not, one will certainly find out.
Thank you.
Sorry. All right. My question is, we want to know how you're going to interface with our school administrators and our secretaries.
At Park City School District, and I hope that's not something I'm referring to too much, but there we found it useful to establish a monthly meeting for school secretaries. So we had a time when they were available to be there. It was in the afternoon, and it was a good opportunity for them to chat with each other, to talk about current issues, as well as to provide changes about funds, dollars, and other issues that might have come up. Perhaps there was something with some remodeling project they were interested in. It also gave us the opportunity to present information, for example, risk management issues. Child nutrition folks would meet and discuss changes that they had in forms or whatever it might be, or if a problem had come up. So we did that with the school secretaries. We also had a monthly meeting with school principals, and so that provided us with the opportunity to give them the information they need. And as I hear some of the questions asked, perhaps this is an opportunity for them to ask questions in advance. We could do an entire presentation on, for example, a certain line item of the minimum school program or something like that. They felt they needed greater understanding of how those funds can be utilized and so forth, how it's calculated.
And part two of that question is, what do you feel are your responsibilities in working with schools?
There are a number of responsibilities to make sure that the dollars are well handled, appropriately handled, within federal law, state law, board policy, and where there are issues. Someone raised the issue earlier this morning about board policy. If things have changed such that board policy needs to be addressed, we need to keep those current as well. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Oh, sure. What do you feel are your responsibilities in working with schools?
Of course, to provide the information that they need within the context of the legal context and all of the associated state rules and so forth about procedures and that sort of thing are kind of voluminous. We should have, I'm sure we've got someone with the expertise there who's current on those rules and laws to make sure that we're doing things appropriately, to answer questions anytime they have them about enrollment projections, budget numbers, current year numbers, personnel issues. I've chatted at length with principals about various problems they might be having in handling certain situations, construction problems, billing problems, cell phone use. This position spans everything that goes on in the district. Except as far as making education decisions, and then it's the financial decisions associated with those. So, yes, it spans quite the range.
Thank you.
Got a number of questions are kind of somewhat related. First part would be, what would you do to educate and train yourself and others?
I have a wealth of experience, but I need to come up to speed on how things are done here in the district. So I have to find out what occurs here and why it works the way that it does. And, of course, one never changes anything unless it's obviously an error or there's reason to do it. So you first gather information, and I've got a lot to learn, and if I'm selected and would put in the hours necessary to do that. And I think that comes in addition to taking on the tasks inherent to the job. So it's, yes, you've got so much to do, but on top of that, you need to learn who everybody is, what their personalities are like, how best to function with various groups and so forth.
Okay. If you could explain to the board your experience in the issuance of GO bonds and the accounting necessary for their management. Did you have that experience up in Park City?
Not once. They had issued bonds previous to the time that I got there. And so I was. We did some refunding there with bonds.
Can you elicit your experience in that, on the refunding?
We worked at the district there with George K. Baum and conducted analyses to decide whether or not it was worth it to go through refunding process, or whether it was better to just make additional payments if the dollars were available to, you know, eliminate those. But otherwise, as far as issuing new bonds, no, I didn't do that.
In the refunding process, what was your involving in the accounting of that for that year's budget AFR?
Well, applied those new payment amounts to the next year's budget as and just keeping track of those within the accounting system. Otherwise, in my experience, tracking those was kind of separate in Excel.
And just kind of as a final, because of the geo bond question, then were you involved in any construction work during the time that you were at Park City? And if so, what was your involvement?
Yes, and so that's why the question about whether your construction is on site, because at the time they kind of swore they would never do that again. Because we had a number of issues, you know, people breathing dust and that sort of thing. But when I got there, the construction of a new wing of the high school was being completed, and so that continued, I think, for about the first year, perhaps a little longer, while I was there. I took a lot of calls about complaints for this or that, or perhaps a subcontractor had or had not done what he was supposed to do, and so I was involved in resolving some of those issues. But we were in the final stages, so I wasn't there for the initial contracts that were put in place.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and our final question that we have for you are, do you have any questions for us?
I'm not sure that I have described well what I'm capable of, what my experience has been, but I am completely open to any questions you might have about what I've done or understanding better what it is that you need to have done here. Do you have any concerns? You know, as there have been other business administrator positions come open while I've been at the state office and prior to that. And I haven't applied because I didn't think it was a good situation. But given what Zane has told me about the environment here, and given that it is Zane and I know his expertise and how well he does things, it was enticement to apply here.
Perfect. All right. I think that concludes this portion of our interview, and we'll have, do we have a break?
No.
We're just going to go straight into that?
Yes.
All right, we're going to go. Thank you very much for your answers to your questions. That was very informative. I know it's probably kind of stressful for you, and hopefully we're not quite as intimidating as it probably feels. Now we're doing you're going to present a data analysis to us. As an open board meeting, are you familiar with what you need to do?
Yes.
Oh, perfect.
I believe so.
As you look, just so for the audience, she was given a series of spreadsheets involving the budget as well as enrollment projections, where our tax levy is, and asked some questions about her interpretation of that and in writing, but we're also asking her now to make basically a presentation to the board as if you were making a presentation in a board meeting about the information. Board members will be asking perhaps some questions from each part, so we'll just go ahead and start with this first spreadsheet and then work our way down.
And if I have it correctly, this the first spreadsheet is minimum school program, which is one that I've dealt with. I've built this spreadsheet for the state for many years. It's not my current function except to administer the K-12 funds. So there is about $1.5 billion that I run algorithms for to put that together twice a year for next year's budget and for our current year. This spreadsheet shows fiscal year 2009 through the current estimates. The mid-year update will be provided within the next few weeks. I was kind of surprised to learn that it has not been done. Because this, now, if I were doing an honest goodness presentation, I'd have a PowerPoint or something. So you wouldn't fall asleep just hearing numbers. But what this spreadsheet indicates is fiscal year 09 to 14 and the changes that have occurred. And I think, boy, this tells the story of the economic turndown. And you can see the elimination of some of those programs and the loss of funds there. And it's obviously a huge concern when your per pupil funding drops. And just to be able to provide a basic program and you don't really have the funds to do it. So, let's go to local funds. Well, that's not feasible during an economic downturn either, because people are already strapped, you know, higher unemployment, so forth, loss of assessed valuation. And those numbers appear at the very top. You see how those have declined. Are they rebounding? Yes, but not quickly. This is anticipated to take some time before we see those assessed valuations come back up to the level that they were there in the 2010 year. So the first thing that legislators will do when funds are short is to try and eliminate a big chunk, and that first big chunk was Social Security and retirement. And as business people, we kind of whined about that one anyway, because it really didn't do what it claimed to be. It didn't fund Social Security and retirement. It gave a piece of money towards that, but it certainly wasn't enough to fully pay for Social Security and retirement for those programs above the line. So in response, they eliminated it and created the flexible WPU allocation at a much reduced amount. So instead of saying, oh, we're eliminating these funds, we changed it to try and make it more palatable. And then the other line items, these are examples, as I mentioned before, about what they do during an economic downturn. It's like, why do we have so many of these programs anyway? They eliminate some of those smaller pieces that they haven't gotten a lot of feedback from their constituents about. And, tickled you've got a close relationship with your legislators, because that's all important. That is foremost. So that they understand the challenges you face in trying to run a district in these various programs. Total funds increased a tad this last year, which is a good thing. I'm sure on a per pupil basis you're not back where you were just yet, but at least we are hopefully going in the right direction. Cooler heads prevail at the Capitol this year. Do you have any questions about this?
I have a question that goes back to the comment you made about Social Security and the legislature's decision to change that from a line item to a non. So to further explain how you felt about that change.
It was always kind of frustrating. But in speaking with legislative staff about that, what they were trying to do was understandable, all things considered. They were trying to decrease funds in a place that would most fairly distribute the pain. And so because the formula for that is a sum of all of the WPUs from the lines above, and my primary interest here is not to give information at such an elementary level. You're well past that. So if I leave things out, please let me know. So the WPU is associated with all of those line items above there, that red line, the line, drive the calculation for that piece. So they said, gee, it affects special ed, it affects class size money and so forth, CTE. if isn't that the best way to go? And so the decision was made 2 years ago, or at last year's session, to do that? No, sorry. So it's been some time. That for that 2010 fiscal year, it would have been the 2009 session. So it was fair. It's just kind of repackaged. It's the same thing. The formula is the same, but it's definitely at a reduced amount. The hope is, of course, that as the economy recovers and they do have additional funds, that they build that back up. The concern is, of course, for example, they have some one-time money this year. It would be inappropriate to put one-time money there. We want money to come back on an ongoing basis. We want that to appear every year for them to build that up and need it, to have it grow proportionate with the WPU's above the line.
So do you feel like that decision from the legislature has been a positive thing for school districts or negative?
A loss of funds, of course, is never positive. I think that they were forced to reduce funds, and they addressed it, you know, from their perspective as best they could by taking it out there. But, of course, that wasn't the only hit that we took during those years. We saw that the value of the WPU was stagnant, which particularly hurt growing districts.
My question would be, and of course, if you talk it, I was going to say, what red flags do you see about regarding our finances? But of course, there are lots of red flags on there just because of the funding sources. What would be your biggest concern for our district looking at this sheet?
At this one sheet?
At this, just this one sheet.
This is for state revenues. You've got a loss over time of nearly $2 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of FTEs. These are all, well, for the most part, most of these programs are associated with FTEs. So these are people. These are your teachers. These are people who are, you know, directly working with kids. And so, yes, it's hurtful. Relationship with the legislators and see if we can beef this back up again. There are legislative forces coming from a number of directions that are trying to eliminate certain funds. And if you've got a good relationship with your legislator, I think that's the best way to combat those sorts of negative inputs. Any other questions about this sheet?
If you were talking to a legislator, what would be the thing you would want to educate them about in terms of its impact on schools? How could we communicate to legislators in a way that is meaningful when they decide to say, well, we're going to cut X, and what's its effect?
It's one thing to provide them with the numbers and to show them what has occurred, but we can tell a story with various charts to say, this loss of revenue has meant at these schools a loss of these personnel, increase class sizes, and show that in chart form so that it tells a story and it carries an impact that just plain numbers. I love numbers, but it doesn't always tell a story to some people. They want to know what the background is, what the actual effects are, and that's how I would handle it. Use some actual stories about the impact from having a larger class size. What's that meant at a certain elementary school? So forth.
And how many teachers we had to lose.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's unfortunate. And, I, you know, as a person with a background in economics, I always tie in to that, because some are just kind of anti-government. They don't want to put any extra dollars in government. But I like to point out that the education of our students today drives tomorrow's economy. We have to have a well-educated workforce. And those are tax-paying people. Whatever rings their bell, let's use those issues to convince them.
Okay. We'll transition to the second question with the two spreadsheets, 2A and 2B. Walk us through those, please.
What you have before you are two scenarios. 2A is the set of tax rates, and I know you're all very familiar with these. You went through the votes in November, so I know you know these numbers well. This was before, and 2B is after, so this indicates the increased levy and the bond increase and the ability to make those payments back. And I think it says a lot about the district and the voters in the district who are, obviously have a trust in the district and what you say the district needs to move forward for them to approve these. There are a number of others that failed this last year. Look at Jordan, failed miserably in their attempt to implement an increase there. This is terrific information. Your 2401, so if we look at a home assessed at $250,000, and if we were to assume that's perhaps mid-range or about average, perhaps it's close to average, that 2401 is perhaps just under what a similar homeowner in Park City or Tooele or Salt Lake would be paying for that same property. So in those areas where there is growth, they tend to have, of course, higher taxes because they're paying for the new construction land and so forth. So perhaps you're just a tad under that. Overall, Logan ranks at eighth in the state for its total level of taxes. So it is a constant balance between trying to provide the kind of education services you want to for the amount of dollars that you have. And so this is the other piece. You also have federal dollars that we don't have before us and the funds that are provided through the foundation. But you have state, local, and federal monies. And, this provides information about those local dollars. Do you have questions about these rates?
As you look at the, obviously there's statutory limits in each of the areas, and looking at those and where we are, what are some areas of concern or areas that you would want to make sure the board was aware of as we go on from this point?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, this the board local levy there is close. So you're pretty close there. I would be concerned about that at the 2482 when the cap is at 2500. Basic levy you can't do a thing about. The political perception there though is that it's part of all of the taxes that are assessed at the local level. So as those drop, perhaps it's an opportunity to change others. Otherwise, taxpayers see a decrease in funding over time, where, of course, you have an increase because of the capital piece, but that does create a bit of an opportunity not to change the impact on homes, if that were your concern.
What is your philosophy about, obviously, as assessed valuations go up, at this point, the law has not changed yet. That means that the state would set the levy at a lower, but we can stay at where we are as long as we go through truth in taxation. What advice would you give the board if that was to occur this next year?
And I'm pretty confident that it will. That's through FI tax rate. You know, will continue to drop. But assessed valuations, you know, if everything goes well, we should continue to increase. It does provide an opportunity that you could bump up your voted local levy to compensate for any decrease on the basic levy piece. If you feel that you have education needs that are not being met, that could be addressed. And, of course, to do that, depending on what the need were, you might have to go through truth in taxation. But if the change is minor, hopefully that is not too painful. If the campaign is such that this is a program that would best address the needs of our students at this time, and we're looking for the long-run return on that, if you will, for example. So I think it could be handled in a way that would hopefully, you know, address the various issues.
You had a comment from a patron about the fact that we are eighth.
Yes.
What were some things you might share with them?
I would want to have a bunch of information in my basket of goodies to use to address, and I would talk about the age of buildings. Districts like Alpine, for example, who are growing so much, get a lot of attention. In fact, there might be legislation coming this way to help them build schools. My concern about that is that in districts with existing buildings need help. It's not like you can open a school in 1950 and expect it not to ever need work again. Existing schools have needs as well, and so I'm concerned that focus might turn to just building new schools. I think that needs to be addressed, so I would definitely discuss this recent change as being part of that issue. We have needs here at the high school that are being addressed, and so this capital levy is in place, and this is what it will do. And to describe the goals of the board, the education goals, and how they are being met with these funds, and then also what are those needs that are not being met. And I don't know what issues you might point out about those, but here they are. Yes, if we had more money, we could reduce class sizes at the elementary schools by 2 children. We could hire an additional teacher at those schools to make sure that patrons know hands-on and exactly how those funds are being utilized and what the intention is, that we are paying attention to every single dollar that comes and goes.
Okay, third spreadsheet in regard to enrollment data.
What you have before you is a perfect opportunity. It lends itself well to charts. I don't have for you here. So average daily membership is kind of the foundation of state funds. So we use average daily membership, which tracks enrollment across the course of a year. And so a student who is in full-time for the entire year generates 1 ADM. And so those are the numbers you have at the very top, those ADM by school. So we can see where those changes have occurred over time. And of course, over the course of a year, you might have a larger number with fall enrollment and that kind of falls off by year end in a growing area, and I suspect that about Woodruff, that you see those increasing So what it does is build in a bit of lag time over the course of funding. So if you have an increase in ADM this year, you'll receive funds for those students next year. If you're declining, it functions as kind of a hold harmless. Fall enrollment numbers indicate that it appears from these numbers that the district does a pretty good job of keeping those elementary kids through graduation. In some areas, you see quite a bit of, you see a more significant drop off there as, you know, kids move on. And I would expect in a college town you might see more movement, but it doesn't appear that you do, and I need to find out more about that. So that looks positive. I would be happy to provide some enrollment projections by grade, whether or not I'm selected. That's part of what I do now. So that's fun stuff. I'm sure that you already know where the growth is going to occur. You've got kind of a steady trend here, albeit if we were to chart it out, you'd see that the enrollment change over time really hasn't varied much. You've got plus or minus 1-3%, which is not great. And I would anticipate slower growth going forward, but growth nevertheless for the next few years.
Do you see any concerns in the numbers? Is there anything that sends up some flags for you?
Yes, in school 104, I believe that's Adams, for example. To look at that over time, that it continues to lose students.
I don't know what you're referring to.
I don't know if you've had discussions about the size of the elementary school there.
It's okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know where the boundaries are, and whether perhaps those could be adjusted to address the growth that might occur in Woodruff to some of the other schools. I don't know what the geography is there. Not an option. That's a pretty small size school. Well, for elementary school.
If you saw the school and the school site, you'd be amazed at how many kids we have in that little tiny school.
Yeah. Am I done with that question?
Okay. What this doesn't show, and probably can't show, is the how transient we are from one area to another area. Is there a way that, since you're acquainted with these, is there a way to track that, and how do you see our high transiency rate affecting what we get credited for with our average daily membership? If you understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, let me take a stab at it. We'll see if I can answer your question. There is just a tad bit of wiggle room in those average daily membership numbers. And so if a student leaves, if you've got a very transient population, a student leaves during the year, you can record that student for 10 days or until the date that you're sure that student has transferred. Sometimes it's not possible to tell. If you have a student whose attendance is infrequent, you don't know whether he's coming back or not. So that provides just a tad bit of cushion there. The IT folks who track the student level numbers are doing so on a daily basis and could provide that information over the course of the year. So we would know what those trends look like by school. And then perhaps it becomes an education issue. How do we address those kids that have attendance problems? But as far as otherwise changing the formula, there's really not much we can do. The funds that you saw on this sheet are primarily average daily membership and fall enrollment driven.
Thank you.
If it's all right, Christy, can I go back to a comment that Jim made? You know, the question about talking to legislators. You made the suggestion that we talk to legislators, we talk about numbers, we talk about the impact, and that, you know, tell the actual stories. Is what do you say as a business administrator to those legislators who listen to all that and still want to dismantle public education, privatize it, end it, you know?
Boy, there's a fundamental chasm there, and I am not sure. I'm not sure how you address that. I think of the countless times I've had those conversations with various legislators, and there is a fundamental difference. And in my current position at the State Office of Education, and forgive me, those of you who are associated with charter schools, we see a number of charter schools that are established with legislators as board members. And at the same time, they're also operating a private company that receive funds directly. So I think there are some inappropriate expenditures. So it seems contradictory that someone who, you know, says government needs to downsize and whatnot, but on the other hand, they're taking advantage of the system for their own benefits. I don't know. I think that's such a great question, and I would do my best to show the information and what actually happens and what the long-term consequences are of education. I was in a legislative meeting some time ago, and one of the staffers said, education hasn't changed. Since 1924, math is still math. English is still English. You're not doing anything differently. I'm awestruck by that. Clearly, someone who has that perception really doesn't know what currently goes on in schools, and I don't know how we best make those points to show this is not the education you had. This has changed completely. It continues to move forward. We're preparing students for the years to come, and it's nothing like what one experienced.
Thank you.
Good question.
That's it.
All right. Any other questions, board members?
Is there anything else you'd like to say in summary of for these three?
Four.
Yes.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate the time you're taking for just one candidate today. I expected there to be a bunch of us here today to help kind of justify your expenditure of time today. I appreciate it very much, and I'm happy to provide any information I can.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate your time today, and we are now going to take a break for until 1:30, correct? If I read the schedule right?
No, we have.
Oh, okay.
Half an hour. We have some time that we have to go into closed session.
That's why we have people on here to tell you what to do. Okay, so we're having a break for a few minutes. How's that?
And then we go back into closed session.
And then we will go into closed session.
Do you want to take that vote now?
After which, then there will be also an interview time with you, with the board. They need to spend some time together, and then so it'll be a little bit of kickback time, and then we'll bring you back in for some specific. Yeah, we should.
Okay, we're going to take the vote now, so that we can just take our break and then go straight into closed session. So we are going to go into closed session. It is now 12:18. I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss the character, competence, or I'm relying upon Stacy over there. What is it?
Mental
health of an individual.
I would so move.
Okay, motion's been made by Ann.
Second.
Seconded by James. I need a voice vote on this, please. Connie?
Yes.
Ann?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Christy? Yes. We will now go into closed session to discuss the competence, mental character, whatever, of an individual. I don't have my paper.
Everyone, thank you for the committee that has stayed. Thank you for your time today. There won't be an announcement today, depending on where we go. That would be done on the 28th, on what direction we're going. So, eat, and then...
In your office?
Yes, let's go down and get some.